The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. So we have Amari Stoudemire on today's show, and very much looking forward to visiting with Stat. I think sitting here every day doing the, well, here's where baseball is today, here's where hockey is today, here's where the NBA is today, after a while, it's mind-numbing, at least it is for me, and that's how I put this show together. There is some stuff in baseball that is somewhat interesting, that I'll get to here in a minute. But to have Amari on board, he's in Tel Aviv, and I want to talk to him about a bunch of stuff. He's been playing over there as an owner. He actually bought a team, and then he left that team to go play for the competing team because the competing team paid more money than the team that Amari owns. So I want to talk to him about how that works. I also want to talk to him about Kobe Bryant. So there's a lot to get to with Amari Stoudemire, and that comes up here in about 10 minutes or so. Opening comments are brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most, and that is with life insurance. So on the insurance side of things, as many of you are looking around now, it sounds like potentially things are going to start to open slowly, which means you're going to slowly get back into your groove. And that means you have everything handled. Have you taken care of all the home projects, all of your personal finance during this time where we are still all self-quarantined? All you have to do is pick up your phone, and all you have to do is log on to Sagicor Now and just get a free quote. That's it. Get a free quote and just see if you're taken care of. Do you have enough life insurance? Maybe last time you got a life insurance policy, you had one kid and now you have four. Okay, if you didn't come home, is everything handled? Do you have enough life insurance? Just go to Sagicor Now. Eric joins us. Hello. How are you?
Doing well. How are you? Nice to see you.
I am. I'm clean. I've been wearing a hat for like the better part of 5 weeks because when you're follically challenged, when you hit that space in life and you start to have like weed patches, right? And the patches start to grow out. At some point, I'll put a picture up, but I have someone who does my manicuring of the garden, so to speak. And I sent this person a note and said, hey, so about an hour ago, I'm sitting on the front porch with a mask on. And she shows up with her mask on and she cleans me up, which in this space, when you're follically challenged, takes like 20 seconds. But, you know, I feel clean. I feel like finally, instead of looking in the mirror going, ah.
So. Yeah. Clearly, I don't have that same luxury as I've had to change my hairstyle because my hair is so long and just out of control. But it's fine. Life goes on.
So did you see the story? There's two stories today that are of interest to me. One is that Major League Baseball did have another meeting yesterday. Bob Nightingale is reporting that it's going to be the three divisions in all likelihood, and that the health officials are closer to saying, yeah, let's get this done. It's helping that Cuomo and Trump and others politically are saying we need to get back to having sports. People are figuring out that sports really does matter and that sports really does heal. And so in this baseball, the three divisions, Eric, that Bob put out, the Houston Astros would be playing out here and we would have the cheating Astros out here in front of nobody. I'm not sure if I like that or not. The idea of having the Angels out here with Mike Trout, having the Dodgers out here, I mean, it beats the heck out of having the Marlins rolling for a three-game series, and who cares? So I'm actually hoping that this is the plan that grabs hold because, you know, if it's the A's, they're a winning team. Bob Melvin's their manager. I think this would be really good. But yet last night was a step forward closer to baseball. And I think that's really the only news side of it. I mean, Woj keeps talking about behind the scenes with the NBA and how uncomfortable they are, but there's just clearly no plan in place where baseball feels like there's something going on, finally.
I don't really care which teams are here because if we can't cover them or watch them, does it really matter if the Marlins or the Astros or the Yankees are here? I mean, maybe just from a national perspective, it might be fine. But to me, we're just going to be watching, you know, you don't have to watch said game in Phoenix. You could just watch whatever game they're playing in Texas, whatever game they're playing in Florida. And I guess for me, Brad, the thing that is just interesting to think about is they're talking about like late June, early July. I mean, we're not even in May yet, so it's great to talk about this, but we may not see baseball for another 60 to 70 days, and that's like twice as long as what we've already waded through. So,
well, and I, in Bob's story, he said the timeline could be pushed forward. It could be earlier that this starts. There could not be as much time. Could be. Now, it's Bob Nightingale. It's not just some hack who's sitting in a basement who's just throwing stuff out there to get a couple clicks. I mean, this is a real deal. So that story is of interest to me. And then today in the Cincinnati Inquirer, of all places, their lead columnist, Paul Dockery, who's been there a long time, wrote that Joe Burrow's got 2 years to get this thing turned around in Cincinnati. And then, quote, after that, things need to change radically and quickly, or the moving vans will be idling outside of Paul Brown Stadium, end quote. So that's from a lead columnist in Cincinnati who clearly has a pulse, finger on the pulse, and clearly sees St. Louis without an NFL team. And clearly see San Diego without an NFL team. And clearly we know the NFL always uses those situations as leverage and to their advantage. Well, if you're not going to get a stadium done, if you can't figure it out, well, we'll just go talk to Carson, California. And we'll rip the Chargers after 56 years their hearts out and stuff them in Carson, and fans will boo the hell out of them and not care about them at all. But we're the NFL, so it's fine. If Vegas wants a team, heck with you, Oakland. We'll figure it out. So that's one of interest to me today.
Away from sports, did you see what Costco is doing?
Masks. And I'm good with this. I'm fine. Right?
Yes, but I've already talked to some people that are not fine with it. So
That's you know what? If they're not fine with it, then don't go to Costco and take your money elsewhere. It's really not that hard. You want to go to Winco, you want to go to Sam's Club, you want to go. If people really believe that wearing a mask, because we've gone to Costco and we've been wearing masks, we have to with our aging parents. People can say we're fear-mongering, all that stuff. This is our life, butt out. So if I don't want to wear a mask, if I want to boycott Costco, if I want to really put my mental energy into, I'm going to go hold a sign out front of Costco, boycotting Costco because they want to wear masks, and that's my lot in life, okay, nice life, I guess. If I want to go walk down to Governor Ducey's office and hold a sign up saying, we have to get back to this and this is all a hoax, knock yourself out. Great. It's the most amazing thing ever. It's free country. I don't subscribe to that. I'll wear a mask to Costco. I'm not going to go get an NFL mask because you know and I know that's coming. It'll be a logoed mask for $9.99, and they'll make gobs of dough off of it. So no,
I guess this is the only – this is like the first step, I think, in Arizona where one of the big companies is saying, starting May 4th, you will not be able to enter our facility unless you're wearing a mask. I know in California, everyone that goes to anywhere is almost required to wear a mask, but now it's sort of making its way into Arizona. I don't necessarily have a problem with it. I don't know. Like,
have a problem with it. You do have a problem with it.
I think it's a little extreme, but I understand why Costco is doing it.
Okay, JetBlue's doing it. JetBlue is going to make everybody that flies JetBlue wear a mask.
It's different, though. You can't. I mean, it's like an airplane is a germ machine. Costco is a gigantic facility where you can easily keep social distancing in Costco.
But you can, and I can. But there are, sorry for the words I'm about to use, there are really dumb people that have no idea what constitutes social distancing. And they're talking on their phone while they have their gloves on and they're picking up, you know, boxes of cereal, looking at it, and they're picking up meat and they're putting it back, and then they don't have their gloves on and they don't have masks on, and they're kind of just walking in front of you and next to you, and they have no idea because people are dumb sometimes. The dumbness at times with some people. Okay, my wife has said to me, man, you seem really grumpy at times towards people. It's like when people go to amusement parks, what happens? They turn their brains off. They do. When they go to Costco, they're just out there, hey, honey, I don't know of anybody else in here except me. So I'm going to walk in front of this person. I'm going to sneeze. I'm going to cough. I'm not going to glove. I'm not going to wear masks because it's only fear factor. Well, guess what? I got aging parents. You don't know that. The person next to you may have an underlying health condition. We talked about that yesterday.
Sure.
You know, so I'm fine with this. Let me ask you this one, and then we'll get to Amari. Going back to high schools, I have a 15-year-old. I think public schools are in for a pretty tough run here because classroom sizes are north of 30 or around 30. They say there's going to be social distancing. Classroom sizes are going to go down. If you have a kid with underlying health conditions, if they have asthma or whatever, do you even risk sending that kid back to school? Or do you homeschool? Do you go to private schools? Do you go to charter schools? Are we going to see schools that open up that say no more than 10 kids in a class? I think this
is all coming. Yeah. I mean, yes to all of those. If you are a parent and you have a kid that has an underlying health condition, if that were my son or daughter, there's no way I'd send him to Chandler High School with 3,500 students.
But if he's a football kid, you'd want him to play for Rick Gerritsen.
Yes, but there are workarounds on that, I would think. I would think you could be homeschooled and still play football, right?
That's going to happen. Right now, it's not very common. I think what you just said was very smart. I think that is going to happen. I think there's going to be people who are saying, my kid is not going to go back to a traditional campus. Now, let's see where this is in a year, 2 years, 3 years from now. All right, Amari Stoudemire joins us next. And Eric has his 2020 vision coming up today. Before you get out of here, who's on 2020 vision?
Today's 2020 vision guest is Tiziah Quint from South Mountain High School, two-way lineman, sort of an underserved star on that team last year. He's going to play at Rocky Mountain College up in Montana, and he's one of my favorite Jaguars I've covered. So looking forward to catching up with Tiz.
All right, good stuff there. Amari Stoudemire from Tel Aviv is next. Stay with us. All right, I'm so excited to have Amari Stoudemire jump on in because his journey to me has been really interesting. Through the years, I've had people have said, hey, where's Amari? I had some people this week when I said he was going to come on the show. I said, I remember the night, Brad, you had him in studio at KTAR. It was the day after he was drafted, and he didn't sound like, you know, he was intimidated by anything. He answered every question, and I had to sit in my car to hear the whole thing. Now, that was almost 20 years ago. So I find stat. You are joining us today from where? Where are you, Amari?
Right now, I'm in Tel Aviv, Israel.
And what are you doing over there for those that don't know about your basketball and your ownership and everything? What are you doing in Tel Aviv?
Well, right now I'm playing for Maccabi Tel Aviv. It's a EuroLeague team. We play in the EuroLeague, also in Israeli League. And right now we're on standby because of the COVID-19 situation.
Mm-hmm. You own a team over there, right?
Yeah. So I own a part of the team in Jerusalem, in which I play for the rival team.
Wait a second. That'd be like owning a piece of the Lakers and playing for the Suns. How's that work?
Yeah, you know what? I wanted to re-sign with them this year, but it didn't happen. And so I want to continue my play. Uh-huh. And so when Maccabi called me, I was ready to go.
So the team you wanted to play for didn't want you, but you own a part of that team. So you went to another team that's the competing against the team. I got it right, right?
Yeah, well, the budget wasn't quite there for me in Jerusalem, so I took my travels to across the waters.
That's great. If in a nutshell, if people were to ask, how are you doing, what would you say? How are things?
I'm doing great, man. I feel great. I'm still playing high-level basketball, still keeping in shape. Entrepreneurship is doing well. I've been able to travel, a lot of learning. Family's doing amazing. We're parked in Miami now, so most of my family's in Miami. But once this basketball deal, my career is completely over, I'll be spending more time in Arizona.
When will that be, do you think?
Man, I'm thinking maybe this year or either next year is my last year.
Last year. No coming back to the NBA. Nobody can entice you.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, it's I gave it a run, but I'm going to stay in shape just in case. But I don't know if it's going to happen or not.
Never say never. Right. On a family side, so off the air, we're talking about your son. So tell me about family and how that works and how's that going.
So the family's well. My three children are in Miami, and my son Amari Jr. is with me here in Israel. He's going to school. He's going to school in Herzliya, which is maybe 10 minutes away from Tel Aviv, international school. He's there with a lot of ambassador kids and a lot of international students. So he's enjoying it. He's loving it.
Basketball in his blood, do you think? Or
yeah, I mean, he plays his basketball still. I mean, his mother played basketball. I play. He plays. So right now it's for him. If he loves it, then so be it. If not, no pressure.
So we're talking with Amari Stoudemire via Skype. He's joining us from Tel Aviv. You're going to come to Phoenix permanent when this is all done? Phoenix will still be home?
Yeah. I mean, my mother still lives there. I still have a place there. I spend a lot of time in Miami because of my children.
Yeah.
But I will be traveling back and forth between Phoenix, Miami, and Israel.
Your time with the Suns, from the night you were drafted, I'm sitting across from you the next night in a radio studio. And that night, I felt like this kid really has something. Now grown man, take me back to your time in Phoenix and how the time was with the Suns and what stands out to you.
You know, it was a remarkable time, man. It all went by so fast. You know the saying, they say, you have time goes by fast when you're having fun, you know?
Yeah.
And I truly had a ball. I had a ball from the first day I touched down in Phoenix to the last day I played, the last game I played in Phoenix. I mean, from the beginning, I was drafted. That whole process of, like, the pre-draft situation was an experience for me. Flying into Phoenix, going to the hotel, then going to the arena, practicing against other guys who may be drafted, having a good workout, and then going to the Diamondbacks game, watching the game, talking to the players, and then having a second workout in Phoenix, which turned out great as well. I went to restaurants. I enjoyed the city. That experience was amazing. Then draft night was, you know, was breathtaking, right? I mean, I can never duplicate that feeling again. And then once I got into Phoenix and started playing, the NBA itself was just taking me by storm. I was more organized. I was learning how to be on time. I was learning how to meet with my doctors and trainers and physios. All that was new to me out of high school, you know.
You had Sean and Penny, Steph yep. Marbury,
yep.
Joe Johnson.
Yep, Gugliotta, Tom Gugliotta.
Yeah.
Yep, those guys played a pivotal role in my early experiences, man. I mean, Penny and Googs, Steph, those guys were like big brothers to me, and they showed me the ropes along the way.
What is it when you look back on your sons in terms of teammates, the best teammate that you had when you were with the Suns that helped you not only on the court but off of it?
I think on the court, my best teammate was Steve Nash and Sean Marion. All right, those guys were veteran players. They were very pivotal in my basketball IQ, like that, for that to grow even more. Off the court, I would say Joe Johnson and I was really good friends. We hung out all the time together. And also, I would say Stephon Marbury. You know, Steph was a guy who showed me around. You know, he showed me the shopping stores. He showed me, like, places to go and eat, who to meet, how to train the offseason. So in my early years, those guys were quintessential to my development.
When Nash came here in 2004 and the pick and roll developed between the two of you, was it seamless or were there times where you guys had to kind of figure out each other? If I remember that period of time, it wasn't like an instant snap. It took a bit.
Yeah, you know what? It took maybe a few practices. No, to be honest with you, man, Steve was a guy who knew how to play the game of basketball. And for me, I was looking for that. You know, I was looking for that PG that can help facilitate the game. And so every time Steve and I stepped on the court, we had a chemistry together where I just knew where he was going. I was reading him. He was reading me as well as he was reading the other teammates. But, you know, he knew where guys were, and he made the game so much easier.
Stockton and Malone was the early comp. Looking back on it, were you guys better than Stockton and Malone?
You know, I think we were more exciting. We created a more up-tempo style of play. I think we were the new edge, the new age, like Malone and Stockton. You know, we kind of brought another style to the game.
Yeah. They had a grit and dirt about them, I think.
Right.
Where you guys got out and just did your thing.
Yeah. We just had fun, man. We played. We outran guys. We outscored them. You know, so that's how we took it.
When you changed your jersey, what was that all about? Looking back on it, you went from 32 to 1. What was it?
I went from 32. And 32, I felt that was like my ultimate number, right? That was my number I had in high school. My brother played in 32. And I wanted the fresh start. Mm-hmm. I was coming off an injury, and I wanted to go with a fresh start. And that's when I changed our number to number one. Number one was always my favorite number, right? So I wanted to go from 32 to number one for a fresh start.
Got it. What number are you wearing now?
32. I'm back to number 32.
There you go. Amari Stoudemire is with us. Your first surgery on your knee, if I remember right, was 2005. And did you know then that the knees may be a thing, or did you think at the time, you know what, this is just a minor injury, I'm going to fight through this?
No, I thought it was a minor injury. I thought I was just having a little bit of knee pain, nothing major. I was coming off from an incredible year the year before, just signed my big contract, looking to take over the league was my mindset at the time. And so when I learned about the microfracture, that took me, you know, it took my breath away. I had no idea what I was dealing with and didn't know the strenuous recovery that it took to recover from it. So I was completely caught off guard. It was very frustrating for me to recover from that. It was very difficult, but I humbled myself enough to even play like in summer league. And I was an all-star. I was, you know, almost an all-star player playing in summer league. And so putting myself out there in front of the public, not 100% healthy, putting myself in front of people to scrutinize my game or not, you know. So, but I was able to persevere through that to still be able to play at a high level for Phoenix.
I remember going and doing a story on you at the Jewish Community Center, I think it was, in downtown Phoenix as part of your rehab. Like, you just showed up to get in a run. And the gym was packed. I don't know if you remember that night or not, but it was like, wow, Amari really is going all the way down to grassroots to get back.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly how I felt. I felt like I needed to just kind of play basketball, work out the kinks, try to feel better, just get a rhythm. Because every time you get injured, you know, other players are building on what they started that previous year. So in the offseason, they can work on their game and get better. For me, I was starting over. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I had to go back to square one, learn how to walk again, learn how to run again, build my running mechanics all over again, how to balance on one leg without, you know, how to balance on two legs, how to jump, land on one leg. And then it's like slowly building up the strength to then play 5-on-5 and then find rhythm of playing 5-on-5 and, you know, then working on the skills, you know, ball handling, shooting jumpers, trying to work on your game. All that took time to get back to the top.
Got it. Amari Stoudemire with us. When Shaq came in February of 08, how did that disrupt chemistry, or was it open arms like this is a, because there's that debate of that was really the beginning of the end when Shaq came in, because it just changed the dynamics. Not a criticism, Amari. It's just, did that start to change everything?
You know what? I don't think so. I think things changed. We brought in Shaq. I think we also hired a new head coach, which was Terry Porter. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Terry Porter understood our style of play for Steve and I.
Right.
You know, Shaq was a, you know, low post threat. But Steve and I, we had a fast break style of play that Shaq had to adapt to. And I don't think Terry Porter was willing to or didn't know exactly how to blend all those talents together. But then once Alvin Gentry stepped in, then we start rolling once again.
Yeah.
He knew the game plan. He knew how we play. And once he stepped in, we start rolling.
Where would you be today without Mike D'Antoni as a coach?
I mean, I would still be Amari Stoudemire, but I think one thing about Mike D'Antoni is that he allowed me to be the versatile player that I was. Mm-hmm. My natural position when I first started playing basketball was a small forward. I was a guy who handled the basketball, shot from the outside. I worked on my perimeter game. But as I got into high school, I was more of a taller athletic, so I moved to the five, to the 4-5. You know, so when Mike D'Antoni came along, he realized, hey, this kid is a versatile guy. He's also strong. We can put him at the five. And so when he put me at the five, at first I was like, man, I don't want to play the five. I'm a four guy. I'm a four man.
Remember.
You know, I want to expand my game. I want to work on the perimeter some. But I bought into it, you know. I agreed with it. And then from that point on, the fives could not keep up with that versatility. And then Sean moved to the four.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really caught the league off guard.
The conversation about you going to Cleveland at one point to be with LeBron, fact or fiction, that really happened?
Yeah, it was a real conversation. It was a real conversation. The word had got around to me that I may be being dealt to Cleveland. And I was like, hey, if I get traded to Cleveland, that's a good move. I don't want to leave Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah.
I just bought this massive home. You know, I have everything set up in Phoenix. I don't want to leave, but if I get traded to somewhere, to Cleveland would be an ideal situation for me.
Before I get you out of here, Amari Stoudemire joining us from Tel Aviv, and I appreciate all your time just walking down memory lane. But I do have to go on to a serious subject about the death of Kobe Bryant. Mm-hmm. When the Suns played the Lakers, and I talked about Kobe's passing, there was not a better vibe in Phoenix than Suns-Lakers. And you have to have a villain on one side of the floor, which Kobe clearly was. And it was really Raja Kobe, from my view, just a lot of stuff there. When you heard the news about Kobe and just some thoughts about competing against him.
You know what? Kobe was a fierce competitor, man. I know everyone says the same thing about Kobe, right? But it's true. And so every time we played against the Lakers, he always had a tandem. He had a tandem team, Shaq and Kobe at first, and then you had Gasol and Bynum, 2 7-foot guys in the paint. He always had a fierce team with him. And whenever they came to Phoenix, there's a lot of LA people that moved from LA to Phoenix. But then you have your Phoenicians also in Phoenix. So the game was like always rowdy, loud, intense. And we loved it. We loved it. And so whenever Kobe played, man, we knew we had our hands full. We know Kobe's gonna give us everything he has, but we wasn't backing down.
Were you too close, Amari?
Yeah, we were. We're really close. Yeah. We're really close.
Did you guys ever talk about playing together?
We spoke about it briefly when the Suns were looking to sign Kobe, mm-hmm. before we signed Nash. Mm-hmm. We were looking at three players actually. We were looking at Kobe, Jason Kidd, and Nash. Those were the players we were targeting. I didn't think Kobe was going to come. Kobe had an infatuation with Mike D'Antoni because he was raised in Italy, and Mike D'Antoni was a player there and coach. So I thought we may have an angle with that, but I really didn't think Kobe would leave the Lakers and come to Phoenix. So that was the only time we had a chance to play with Kobe or for him to join us in Phoenix.
When the tragedy happened, where were you and how did you handle it?
I was in the game. It's funny, it's all over YouTube, man. I was in the game. And my teammate was like, you heard what happened? I'm like, no, what happened? I'm at the free throw line. He's like, man, Kobe died. I'm like, what? I started laughing. Like, man, get out of here, man. Don't play like that. It's not a game. He's like, no, seriously. I'm like, come on, man. So it sunk in briefly. But the game was being played, so I had to refocus. So I'm playing the game. And so... At halftime, the reporter comes to me and says, hey, you have a halftime interview. And he says, he looks at me in a strange eye. He says, you know, Kobe passed away. Mm. And that's when I knew it was real. And I actually just went into a moment of silence. I couldn't say a word. The interview was like maybe 30 seconds. And I said maybe two words the entire time.
Wow.
So I walked to the side, started crying, went to the locker room, started crying. my coach told me to stay inside the locker room. Don't come out. Third quarter. You know, you can come out mid third quarter or so. And I never could get it together from that point on.
Last question, I'll let you go, and I appreciate again all your time, Amari. And that is, you spoke about ownership. You're doing ownership. Could you see ownership of an NBA team down the road?
Yeah, I thought about it. I spoke with a few guys about it who was like partners of mine who were looking to maybe get into the sports ownership situation as far as NBA is concerned. I thought about it for sure. And with having experience of dealing with the team here in Israel and also playing in the NBA, it wouldn't be a bad idea.
It's really good to see you. I'm really proud of you. I have to say that from where you were that night as a skinny little runt, you weren't really little. You were where you are now. And I look forward to seeing the journey as it continues, Amari. Thank you for all the time.
No problem. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
There's Amari Stoudemire with us from Tel Aviv. And we're back with more after this timeout. Thanks again to Amari Stoudemire. So Eric's got his 2020 vision here. In about 5 minutes, we'll get into that. What'd you make out of Amari?
Just so many great memories. It just brought back every amazing emotional moment that I lived in that era as a Suns fan. And the one thing, Brad, that really stood out to me was if Kobe would have joined Nash and Amari, it would have been like the big three of Bosh, D-Wade, and LeBron, but, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years earlier than that. And that, I mean, I was salivating the fact that actually, you know, Kobe was actually kicking the tires on the Suns a bit, so.
Well, I remember that period, and I remember Jerry and then Robert, you know, there was that whole space there, but it was really Mike D'Antoni that was trying to get Kobe, and we had talked about it. I felt like in hearing him today, looking back on it, you know, everybody knew the Terry Porter deal was a disaster. Everybody knew that. The idea of him going to play with LeBron was something that was out there. I think Coro even wrote about it at the time. But, you know, a lot of stuff can be put out there. How real was it? I think him being an owner down the road was something that you could clearly see. I don't know if it made sense, him playing for a team against a team that he owned that didn't want to pay him. But, you know, that was fun. I did not get into the did he really bathe in wine with rubber duckies. So,
that's true.
You always have an interview where you beat yourself up and say, you know, I left one thing out, which would have been something that a lot of people would have liked to have heard. But it was good to get him nonetheless.
I also love the part, Brad, where he talked about Kobe and the fact that he was actually in a game when someone was like, hey, Kobe passed away. And he's like, what? I'm at the free throw line. I'm shooting a free throw. I mean, that just really humanizes it. Kobe's death is going to be one of those experiences where every single one of us will know where we were when Kobe passed away.
Right. The where and the when and how we all processed it. No, there's no question about it. All right. Eric's 2020 vision guest is next. Stay with us.
Welcome back. I am Eric Sorensen, and we are excited to do another 2020 Vision guest. This morning, we are going to be joined by South Mountain two-way lineman Tzaiah Quint. He's also a wrestler and one of the better stories to tell on the high school scene. Tiz, it's good to see you. How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
Doing really well. Thank you so much for the time. How have you been staying busy during the pandemic?
During the pandemic, I've really just been playing video games. I've also been doing home workouts that my college sends me or I do with my uncle. And I've been trying to find a job just to keep myself busy.
Cool. Speaking of college, you will be going to Rocky Mountain College next year in Montana. You'll be playing the offensive line. You and I have not spoken since you made that decision. So walk us through why Rocky Mountain was the best choice for you to continue, not just the football side of schooling, but the academic side as well in college.
I chose Rocky Mountain because my junior year, they came to South right before the summer started, and we had a conversation. They had a conversation with the whole 2020 group, and they really caught my attention. So since then, I've been like, I've been knowing I wanted to go to Rocky Mountain. And so they just brought me the offer my senior year. I had other offers to choose from, but they were the best fit when it came to money-wise and atmosphere. They have a great place out there in Montana, Billings. It's a nice city. And I connect with some of the coaches. And also, there's a lot of people from Arizona, so I won't feel left out.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, you and I met last summer up in Ash Fork. I mean, there's no better way to spend 5 days in the heat of the summer than up in Ash Fork, Arizona. You're one of the better success stories, and I think I really attach to you because your backstory is unique. If you could just sort of take us through your journey from Mountain Point, where you started, to where you ended up at South.
I started at Mountain Point. I didn't play football my freshman year. I went out for my sophomore year. Didn't get much playing time. Was a bench warmer. I wasn't really feeling the vibe of the area of the school or people around it. So I chose to move to South, which was the place I originally wanted to go to. And when I got here, the twins treated me just like family. Got in the weight room. I really wanted to get better. Got stronger. All the coaches taught me how to get better. And when you're out there with people that love you, like on the field, like the players and all, we make each other better because we go hard and everybody is there for one goal.
Well said. What advice would you give for other high school athletes, whether it be football, I know you wrestle, basketball, about staying on course and not giving up on that dream of playing high school sports? You could have easily just said after your first year at Mountain Point, like, yep, I'm done. I'm not going to play football anymore. I don't have the passion for it. But you made the move to South. Clearly it paid off. What would you tell those other student athletes?
I would tell them that mental toughness is a real thing. You have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, as my coach would say, and just don't give up on yourself. There's a lot of opportunities for you to get better, and once you see the opportunity, take it. I, like you said, with wrestling, I had no experience to wrestling, and I tried it, and it turned out I loved it, and it also paid off for me on the football field. So I continued to wrestle because it helped me out in big ways.
You mentioned the twins, the Carter twins. They're now at Desert Edge, but it's been well documented what they have done at South. Yeah. Sort of reflecting back on last year, it was a nice exclamation point to your high school career. Although you guys did not make the playoffs, you won your region, you took care of business. As you look back on those memories, what will you remember most about the 2019 season at South Mountain?
What I remember most is just the group of people we were with. Like the twins, yeah, they left, but they still did more for me than Mountain Point ever did or other people have ever done. And they don't notice that the twins put everything on the line for us. And just because they're leaving doesn't mean they don't care about us no more. One thing I'm going to miss is the pregame speeches.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they used to get us motivated and hyped. He would give us a word of the game, and Coach Mark would give us the word of the game, and the word of the game was always true. And we would wonder how he came up with that. But other than that, it's just the people, man. Like, you're never going to see that group playing on the field all at once ever again.
Yeah, those two are not just amazing coaches, but they're amazing people. And you could say the same about every single one of those South Mountain coaching staff members from the last couple of years there. I've been doing quite a few of these 2020 Vision Skypes. And one of the things I really like to ask you guys or girls is, if you've picked up any sort of hobby during the pandemic. So let's see, we've had Paxton Earl from Arcadia who has perfected his TikTok. We had Jake Martinelli from Horizon who is really into puzzles. We had Alexandra Zelaya, Millennium high school basketball player that's going to North Carolina. She has really taken up art. It was always her passion, but now she's really perfected it. Is there anything that you have done kind of off the beaten path besides playing video games that you know, whether it be like more sleep, whether it be like hiking mountains, is there anything that you've done sort of out of your routine since we've been on lockdown?
There's two things, actually. I learned how to cook way more. I got better at cooking.
Oh, okay. So what exactly do you cook?
Sometimes I would cook like chicken Alfredo for myself or jambalaya and stuff like that. I'm trying to experiment and get better at everything instead of just trying to cook noodles or cereal every day.
That's
good. And my second hobby, I know you said no video games, but I kind of became a god at Call of Duty. So if anybody
How's online school been going? Has that been tough to stay on track? You've been all right with that?
I've been all right with it. I can manage. My grades were really high as before this all happened. So it really isn't that hard to keep it up. So I just do the little work that I have to do.
All right. Leave me with this. You're in the second semester of your senior year. This should really be like the best time for you to be on campus. You've got the football part out of the way. You know where you're going to college. Right. But I'm guessing there is no prom now at South?
No, there isn't.
No prom. How about graduation? What's the latest with that?
They said they had multiple ways of doing graduation, but they haven't came up with a final one yet.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, hey, it was really good to see you. And again, I'm really proud of you. I know that you and I have had some heart-to-hearts over the last several months. And I really appreciate you taking some time. Best of luck, man, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate you for having me on the show. And,
of course.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you soon, all right, man?
Yes, man. Thank you. Have a good day.
You got it. You too. That's Tadiah Quint from South Mountain High School. He is on his way to college, Rocky Mountain College in Montana. He's going to be playing football. One of my favorite student athletes to cover. I'm Eric Sorensen. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow with another installment of 2020 Vision.